Blog Talk Radio.
You got to listen to the Bob Carson Show. It's about the real deal. And this is Les Leopold, the author of Runaway Inequality, An Activist Guide to Economic Justice.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009, when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Harry Kaysen, member supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement. As Zeitgeist members, we know that it is virtually impossible to find sources in the media that speak truth to power. Well, Carson's Corner does just that, and it is one of those special places where you can find out what is really going on. Not just what the bosses want you to know and think. So listen in and hear some truth at Carson's Corner. And oh, by the way, be sure to check out all the Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist-related films you can find on YouTube. We've got a world to save.
This is Greg Palin, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio. Radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
Listeners, and welcome to Revolutionary Socialist Review. This is your co-host, Chris Driscoll, and along with me tonight is Rainer Shea. Tonight is Monday, May 25th, Memorial Day here in the United States, where the nation's military fallen are honored. We've been perusing the news all week, and what we see that jumps out above and beyond all the rest is America's anti-China hysteria being whipped up by President Donald Trump, who I affectionately refer to as the orange buffoon. This is the greatest threat right now to world security. It's the greatest threat to the future of humanity. This could well spiral out of control with a few mistakes here and there and end up in nuclear war. This is not a good situation, and so that's mostly what we're going to be talking about tonight. Rainer, are you with us? Oh, wait a second here. Here we go.
Yes, I am
Rainer?
Here.
Okay,
yes,
sorry.
I am here.
Muted
and
on this side, so go ahead.
And I saw that you plan to discuss something I've written this week about the cultural reaction to China. I'm eager to talk about it when we get to it.
Okay, maybe we should just launch right in. Got some other topics as well, but of the four topics tonight, I should warn in advance that I'm still stuck with this phone that will not keep a charge for more than an hour, so I'll probably fluke out around the one-hour mark, and hopefully we'll get through these four topics before then. So, Rainer, first of all, I've got to say that was a stupendous article that you wrote on, entitled "The Profoundly Ominous Nature of America's Anti-China Hysteria," which can be found, I believe, on on Medium. So Rainer will maybe give you some information. In a bit on how you can get the actual article. But in the meantime, let's hear it right from the horse's mouth. Take it away, Rainer.
In this article, which you can find on my website, rainershay.com, and on medium.com, in this article I discuss America's cultural reaction to China. I discuss why the political and media establishment have been able to so effectively stir up anti-Chinese sentiment among Americans. The person who inspired me to write this was Michael Parenti, who I quote several times throughout the article. Parenti has assessed the nature of American culture and the ways that Americans react to certain factors, particularly towards socialism and towards perceived enemies. Throughout his observations, Parenti has concluded that that Americans, and by Americans I mean the right wing base of the Republican Party, are inclined to think in black and white in a lot of ways, to side with what they see as serving God and as serving the country. He has a book on this, Super Patriotism. He also discusses a topic like this in his book, The Culture Struggle. So this cultural inclination to hate and fear communism and to hate and fear the designated enemies like China are now being exploited by the political and media class. The imperialist propaganda network, facilitated by this weird cult called Falun Gong and its partner newspaper, the Epoch Times, are spreading anti-Chinese conspiracy theories, and much of the population is eating it up because they're inclined to they've been conditioned by their culture to accept these kinds of things as true. I mean, You've read the article, so you know the quotes that I'm referring to, the Bible quotes that instruct people to have disdain for the wicked, the so-called wicked, and to think that God will punish the wicked while rewarding the righteous. And we're seeing this now as Trump supporters believe that they're somehow especially immune from the plague that's gripping the world. It's notable that plagues are mentioned as one of the divine punishments throughout the Bible, and now it's appropriate that a plague is the issue that this cultural reaction is centering around. Like I said, you read the article, and you know what I'm referring to when I say that the Christian right in America is primed to react to China in this way.
Yes, I do. unfortunately. And that is but unfortunately, it's not just the wackadoodles out there, the far right fundamentalist Christian wackadoodles that constitutes Trump's base, but polls recently have shown that about 80% of the American public has been swept up in this anti-China hysteria. And of course, most of these people have no clue as to how damaging this will be to the average American. This war on China, this war of words that accompanies a war of terrorism, which the United States has been involved in against China, and a threat of a hot war with ships moving into Chinese territorial waters in the South China Sea, and planes, jet fighters buzzing Chinese islands in the South China Sea. This is getting very, very, very serious. And as I say, most of these people have no clue as to how dependent American industry is on Chinese goods and services, on the Chinese supply chain. They're utterly dependent on it, and much of what they're dependent on cannot be replaced. Like the whole electronics industry, totally reliant on some rare earths, rare minerals, that China is one of the few places they are mined, and China is the supplier of the whole electronics industry, computers, smartphones, radios, televisions, everything will be devastated, flat screens, everything, every part of that industry in the United States will be devastated if Trump carries out his threats. And here's the threat that he made last week, that he is going to totally cut off China. Now, as insane as that is, that would cause huge disruptions in the already depression-plagued American industry. American industry, American manufacturing industry has already fallen into second place behind China, as China now carries out the largest, most powerful manufacturing economy in the world. The United States, of course, is second, which actually, when you think of how much that is, how what percentage of the world's manufacturing that represents, it's pretty heavy. I mean, the United States alone is in no immediate threat of losing its industrial base, as many, many, many people already mistakenly think has happened. The United States still has a tremendous, huge, powerful manufacturing base, factories and mines and mills and farms, and the list goes on and on. But in almost every case, those manufacturing concerns are dependent on a supply chain that begins in China, that relies on Chinese manufacturing. The world is incredibly interdependent these days, and China and America are incredibly interdependent. So, now, I've been saying for the last couple of years that if I were China, I would cut off America. I mean, it would not last long if they really did this, but if they just cut America off, America would be on its knees within weeks begging China for some resolution, for some new trade treaty. That's what they ought to have done to solve this problem way back when. But for all we know, Trump, in his utter ineptitude and idiocy, may carry out this task for China and force it upon China so that China is forced into this situation. And yet the result will be the same. American industry will be screaming. So this is just incredible to me what's been going on. On another front, the American espionage apparatus, the CIA, NSA, and so forth, have been instigating terrorist riots again in Hong Kong, forcing China, we spoke about this in last week's episode, forcing China to come up with a new law. It was fortuitous that China's People's Assembly was meeting last week so that they could craft and pass this new law, which will bring some order to the chaos that has been enveloping and swallowing Hong Kong. Hong Kong used to be a real powerhouse. I mean, for such a small city, state, city island, whatever you want to call it, island city, they had a tremendous economic power. In 1997, when control of Hong Kong was turned over by the British Empire to the Chinese people, Hong Kong constituted some 40% of the entire Chinese economy. Today, it's less than 3%. Hong Kong, part of the reason for that is that the Chinese economy on the mainland has grown so tremendously, but part of it, too, has been that utter, unfettered, chaotic cowboy capitalism has been allowed to run rampant in Hong Kong, and it has destroyed the Hong Kong economy. The Chinese look like they're about ready now to move in and reestablish some order and put the kibosh on the capitalist chaos. But the American espionage apparatus has been instigating terrorism in the way of riots, in the way of economic sabotage. So the Chinese really need to move in there. As they are doing this, the Trump regime in America has been threatening military move, which would really, I mean, the Chinese would just crush them if they did that, if they were really to do something like that. So things are getting very, very worrisome right now. We can only hope that Donald Trump, the orange buffoon, is not quite as stupid as he constantly appears to be. That's our only hope, because China's in a position right now where they cannot back down, and they will not back down. So there you have it. We'll have a lot more to say during the next 38 minutes about this. So anyway, Rainer, anything more on the first topic?
Oh, well, this might go into the other topics, but I'm really wondering how serious Trump is in his statement that he says he wants to cut off all Chinese exports to the U.S. and wouldn't this ultimately mean getting rid of any new products that say made in China? Most of the things I seem to own are made in China. So
yeah.
Would it really mean something this drastic?
Well, the thing is that it's far, far, far more drastic than you described there, because it's not just the made in China items that come from China. It is the parts, the commodities that are unnamed that come directly to American industry. That's where the real problem here is, because the whole supply chain, parts supply chain, components and sub-assemblies and so forth that come from China and go into American-made goods that end up saying made in America, although they're not, that's where the real problem lies, because that's going to bring American industry to its knees.
Yeah, so this sounds like a somewhat apocalyptic scenario. So I doubt Trump will actually do this. It might be another one of the things he likes to say,
yeah,
when he said we'll destroy North Korea with fire and fury.
Right. We can only hope. There's a caller here, 504 caller. Let's see. Let's take that right now.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I'm calling.
What's your name?
Hey, I'm calling. My name is Bob. I'm calling from New Orleans, and I was just enjoying so far. I was looking for a program to listen to, and I agree with your assessment on the president in general as Trump. However, I do have a differing opinion regarding China. China recently has the Chinese government, I should say, along with Chinese citizens in Guangzhou, city of Guangzhou, have recently displayed severe racist treatment of Africans in that city. It had been rumored that people who were coming back into China were carrying COVID, and it was blamed on the Africans. And so the Africans who are living in Guangzhou, in fact, I think Guangzhou is a city where you have a large concentration of continental Africans that live there and go to school and work. The a program, if you will, began on them. The landlords began putting them out of their apartments. They were refused to be in hotel rooms. Even McDonald's refused them, and the corporation McDonald's had to close. And many of the people there have been, through social media, have been sending videos of their treatment to places outside of China that have made different social media forums. The Chinese government have gone to these Africans who have done this and have tried to make them say that these things didn't happen. And there are many examples and stories that are going on. In Africa itself, China is carrying on a colonial-style project in Africa, attempting to take over the African governments. They're even in those African countries with restaurants telling the people in Nigeria or Zambia they can't come into the restaurant. So China really has shown to me it's no different than the European powers in terms of its ambition and its desire to rule and control. The difference, I tell many black people, is that here in the U.S., you can at least debate about freedom, liberty, equality. The Chinese don't even have no sense of that. So they're going to be even more harsh and worse to African people than the Europeans have been.
Okay, Bob, thanks so much for that comment. I don't agree with it, but I would have to look into it a lot more. Rainer, what are your thoughts on Bob's comment?
There are many facets to this, and I've heard similar analyses in other instances. One of these, what I'm certain that I can dispute is the idea that that China is colonizing Africa. I haven't seen evidence that China has been trying to carry out regime change attempts in the way that the United States does, and the way that China loans to these countries is fundamentally different from the way the imperialist U.S. aligned powers do. There's an excellent piece on this, Five Imperialist Myths About China's Role in Africa, from Liberation News. It really breaks down the fundamental differences between how the West gives out loans and the way China gives out loans. Otherwise, I have seen some evidence of Chinese interests clashing with the interests of the local people in the African countries that it does business in, and this is an issue, a complication that's arisen from this choice China has made to invest its corporations globally. As for the accusations of racism on the part of the Chinese government, I can't speak to the accusation that China has tried to cover it up. But from what I understand, the Chinese government has responded to these instances of racism among individuals with zero tolerance, cracking down on it. And this is different from the United States, which not only allows racism in numerous facets of American society, but is a lot less tolerant on anti-racist voices, from what I understand.
Could I address those points that you brought up?
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead, Bob.
With respect to the Chinese government attempting to give the impression that there's zero tolerance of racism is only because of the response of the African governments to their citizens being mistreated in China. Nigeria, for example, the foreign minister of Nigeria summoned the Chinese ambassador to raise the question of the treatment there. And that situation that have occurred in Guangzhou during this pandemic has created problems for China on the African continent right now, because many of the countries are now cracking down on illegal Chinese immigrants in those countries who are doing things like pirating the mines and other minerals and attempting to swindle the locals. And so So it's not like the Chinese government, out of a conscience and a moral duty, is addressing this. It's because of the pressure they're getting from these African countries there. You talk about the way that Chinese give loans. That's called soft power. The ultimate intention at the end point is that they control Africa, they control the mineral resources, and ultimately annihilate the people. And so many African people in those countries are waking up. There is anger in the African countries at the Chinese as to how they have seen their fellow citizens mistreated, continually being mistreated today. And so this is a real situation that's causing problems for China right now. And many of the masses of the people, because many of the African heads of states have been bought off and purchased with Chinese money. But the people are causing problems for the governments, forcing them to do something about China. They're getting tired of the Chinese superior attitude. There was a museum in China where they had an exhibit, and it was showing African animals. And next to each animal, they had an African face. The Africans that were living there complained about that. The Chinese didn't understand why that was racist. So there are many things in the Chinese are doing that are carrying out traditions of racism we saw here in the West, such as minstrel shows where they're blacking their faces, et cetera. I can go on and on with this.
Okay, Bob, we thank you very much for your commentary. I have absolutely no doubt at all that there is in China, just like there is in the United States, segment of the population that is racist, chauvinist against other races. That's well established and long term. The Communist Party of China has spent the last century attempting to educate people not to be that way. It is a core part of communist ideology, a core part of Leninism, a core part of Maoism. The idea that racism is an ugly threat to the global working class. I believe, from what I've seen, that the Chinese government and the Chinese Communist Party are committed and continue to be committed to creating a situation in Africa, building up infrastructure, which is what they're doing, basically building up industry and infrastructure to give African countries on an equal basis with China a chance to fair trade with China. What China is looking for is not what the Americans are looking for. And we've seen that over and over again. Rayner mentions the U.S. Covert regime change efforts over the last century, which Africa knows well about. So, anyway, I don't think that things are quite as Bob suggests. Bob sees some real racism in some parts of China and comments on that, and that should be commented on. It should be condemned and crushed, and I think that the Chinese government is trying to do that. Unlike the American government, which with Donald Trump in power openly fosters this kind of ugly racism. Anyway, we don't have much time left. We've only got like 25 minutes, so we're going to move on to the next topic, which is China represents hope for the 21st century socialist movement. And this also comes from Rayner's prolific body of work from last year, from 2019. Rayner, I don't know if you quite remember this, but it was posted in the last week, and I thought it was appropriate to bring up again in the context of this current hysteria and anti-China warmongering that Donald Trump and along with Democrats and Republicans in the Congress have been whipping up recently. Go ahead, Rayner.
He mentioned soft power and how China's global economic maneuvers are working to project Chinese influence, and this isn't an untrue assessment. But really, I think whatever soft power China is projecting, it's for the better throughout the colonized world. I mean, this article I wrote discusses how China's foreign loans and its Belt and Road Initiative are undoing the global economic inequity that Western imperialism has created in the last several centuries. I describe how China is helping lift up colonized third world countries and making them closer to being on par with the productive forces of the First World and the Imperial Core. So as China helps lift these the economies of these countries up, it's ultimately going to make the global proletariat have more of an economic leverage and be able to compete with the economic leverage of the global capitalist class. So in this way, China is fostering future socialist revolutions by economically empowering these colonized nations. China may not have a policy of directly aiding revolutions around the world, but because China is functioning as an economic counterweight to Western imperialism, it's making the potential for anti-imperialist revolutions and thus socialist revolutions more present in these colonized third world countries. I think in the coming decades we're going to see a rise of these colonized countries, and as the imperial core continues to decline and as Western imperialism continues to decline, and the Chinese economic model could become proliferated because of this.
Okay. Excuse me. I thought I had gotten all that done before I got back on the phone. Yes, I agree 100%. We'll be getting more into this in topic number three as well, but China's Belt and Road Initiative, building up infrastructure throughout Asia and Africa, and even into Eastern Europe, represents the creation of an entirely new market, which represents more than half the world's population and close to half of the world's economic capacity, a huge, huge market, and ripe for potential. However, China identified 5, 6, 10 years ago the problem of lack of infrastructure. And so China's Belt and Road Initiative has been aimed at creating the infrastructure that will allow free trade, real, authentic free trade, honest, fair trade between equal sovereign nations. And that's what China's aim is in the Belt and Road Initiative. That's what China's aim has been in creating a new financial infrastructure for the world, new ways for the world to trade that will allow the world to avoid the U.S. dollar hegemony, which is our next topic. But this represents a huge potential for freeing formerly oppressed nations, nations many of whom are still oppressed by American and European and Japanese imperialism. This is the way forward, really, for freeing those nations up from this oppressive imperialism that has oppressed and repressed them for more than 200 years now, more like 300 years. The time of European and American imperialism is quickly coming to an end because of that. That's, I think, ultimately why China represents hope for the 21st century socialist movement, because this will create an entirely new situation for the global working class movement, the global socialist movement, the global revolutionary socialist movement, to move forward towards the ultimate goal of a global socialist revolution. Anything else on that, Rainer?
No, we've explained it.
Okay, good, because we've only got 18 minutes left, and I wanted to get to China threatens U.S. dollar hegemony. Yeah, now this, we've been talking about this on this show for a couple of years now. However, just in the last week, I've seen several sources talking about the same thing. For example, a stupendous article entitled China's New Cryptocurrency, First Step Towards Full De-Dollarization in the Greenville Post. Next, we move to Forbes.com, to the Forbes magazine. And, of course, people in America who keep up with business news know that Forbes is one of the two premier magazines, news magazines for the business world, for the economic world. And they say Donald Trump could be about to lose U.S. dollar hegemony to China. There are other examples I've seen, but I'll leave it at those two. This is a tremendous change because since the end of World War II, what was that, more than 70 years ago, the American Empire has dominated the world. Now, the American Empire is a new type of empire. It's, we often call it neo-colonialism to differentiate it from the colonialism of the past, the colonialism, for instance, of the former British Empire, although the current British Empire has adopted the American way of controlling countries. And, of course, the British Empire still controls a huge economic base through their British Commonwealth. One of the main ways that they control about 30, 35 countries, something like that, another 70, 80 countries are controlled directly, indirectly, by the Americans using these methods. But first and primarily is the American control of the American dollar. The American dollar hegemony in the world, because America has been able to impose use of the U.S. dollar as a trade currency throughout the world, impose it on practically every country. This gives America an enormous control over the rest of the world. Added to that, of course, is America's use of threats of war, regime change operations against countries, war itself, which is it is used against the most recalcitrant independent countries that refuse to come under the thumb of the American Empire, and many other ways that the American Empire controls a huge part of the world, probably 65 to 70% of the world, and tries to control that other 35-30% of the world that stands up to U.S. imperialism. The U.S. has done this through its control, through its forcing, through setting up mechanisms like the SWIFT banking, interbanking system that forces countries all over the world to trade in U.S. dollars. The U.S. itself gains by being able, therefore, to print up as much money as they want because they have this control of this hegemony over the world's currency operations and trade. This has allowed for the control of trade around the world, for the United States to dampen trade where it wants, to increase trade where it wants, it's been an extremely powerful thing. Well, many attempts over the last 20 years have been made to get out from under the U.S. dollar's hegemony. For example, Muammar Gaddafi in Libya attempted to create a new pan-African currency for pan-African trade and to force countries to buy their oil in that currency. And the result was that soon after that, within a year after that, the United States, Canada, and Europe descended on Libya with total war and devastated that country, turned it into an economic basket case, a social political basket case, which it is still today. Other examples, Saddam Hussein attempted to do the same thing the following year. U.S. Under George W. Bush invaded Iraq and overthrew and eventually decapitated Saddam Hussein. Other cases, there are plenty, but I'll leave you with that. The upshot here is that many attempts have been tried. However, China, the big new powerhouse, economic powerhouse, is creating a interbanking, international system for trade in the yuan, Chinese currency, which has become more and more popular throughout Asia, through all, even among the U.S.'s close partners like Japan and South Korea. They've adopted this. And China is today giving a tryout to cryptocurrency that will be controlled by the China Central Bank that will allow, this is like Bitcoin, basically, it will allow trade through this neutral cryptocurrency. And this is why these many commentators, including Forbes, are commenting that the U.S. dollar's hegemony is under grave threat and it's about to collapse. So, Rainer, thoughts?
Yep. All these factors explain why this week the White House put out a statement called United States Strategic Approach to the People's Republic of China, where the White House effectively it formally declares Cold War with China. It outlines the Washington's intent for dealing with China in the coming months and years, and they've formally decided that China is an economic enemy of the United States, and they've formally decided that they'll respond to what they call China's transactional approach with what they call credible threats from the United States. So it sounds like Trump and his advisors are wanting to seem serious with their threats against China, which is, I guess, that credible threats remark is not good news, because we were earlier we were talking about how disastrous Trump's threat to cut off Chinese exports would be. So it looks like the United States is going to continue to economically isolate itself from China. But in the process, they'll keep economically isolating themselves from the world, and the American capitalist class will continue to lose its capital. I wonder what's next for them. Maybe they'll migrate to another part of the world.
Yes, probably so. Well put, Rainer. Unfortunately, my phone is giving out. It's beeping at me constantly now. So I've just got like less than a minute to wrap up here and say goodbye for now and come back next week. And the good news is that my new phone, which I have ordered, which hopefully will keep a much longer charge, is coming in to be delivered tomorrow. So by next week, I'll be able to go back to longer shows if need be. So, Rainer, thank you so much for your brilliant commentary and your brilliant writing, which has informed our discussion tonight. And thank you to all the listeners out there. Please join us for another episode of Revolutionary Socialist Review next Monday, same time, same place. Hasta la vista, Rainer. Hasta la vista, everybody else.
Bye.